Christian.
Bar.
First of all, this is Part-Time Fanboy, and we call ourselves Part-Time Fanboy because we have lives, and we are
some of us do.
We're not always the first ones every week at the comic shop or in the movie theater, but we're geeks, we're nerds, we have opinions, and we like to talk about stuff, and we may not be current, we may not be new, but we're definitely opinionated, so we wanted to start a podcast to just talk about geek stuff, random geek stuff. So what do you guys want to talk about right now? What's on the plate for today? Anyone?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess I watched the Walking Dead show.
Which one? Like season one or two? Or you watched
the new one came out, I think, like last week, the first
episode.
It was
on last Sunday night, yeah.
Yeah. And what did you think?
I'm always, like, last season, there were about two or three episodes where I was like, one more try. I'll give it one more try. And I kept giving it one more try, and, you know, it paid off. The end of the first season or whatever it was, really paid off. I think that was the second season, wasn't it? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think last season.
I don't know.
I think last season. Do you read the comic books?
I read the first compendium. And I'm looking for the second compendium kind of out of the corner of my eye. I actually don't want to go back and read that book because it's really dark. The book is amazing.
Does the compendium go?
I read the whole thing. I read the whole compendium one.
Yeah, no, but how far into the series does compendium one go? Because I don't have it.
That's the problem. They're not really doing that. They've branched off into a whole different alternate universe that exists with some of the elements of the actual published book, but for TV, it's a different deal.
Well, yeah, the TV show is completely different. I mean, completely different. But I was just asking, like, with the compendium, how far into the comic book series does the compendium? Because I just want to know how far you got.
It goes past the governor's arc.
Past the prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because the prison, I wrote a review on Ain't It Cool News a long time ago. The prison arc. For anyone who's out there, I do some comic book reviews for Ain't It Cool News Comics. We didn't do introductions, but maybe we can splice those in or do them for a different time. But I was calling it during the prison arc, the Talking Dead, because I was so fed up with the book after a while. And then the payoff, to the prison arc, which went on for way too long, in my opinion, was unbelievably just like gut punch, you know, kick to the nuts. You're not getting up for a couple of minutes. Amazing. And it revitalized the series to me, the comic book series. And I've still been reading them ever since.
I think the issue with the TV show, from what I've read, is, you know, they had a big shakeup. They got rid of Darabont because he has been prone to extending budgets and extending production shoots. That's kind of his thing. They got rid of him. AMC is of itself. They don't really do anything. I think they just function as an office and hire separate people to shoot stuff. So they've been, and I know this because I have a contact over there. So they try to keep things on a budget. So, you know, first thing when that budget goes is going to be your zombie stuff. It's going to be your action stuff, and you're going to get talking. So right now, I got to say my favorite show that I watch is Justified.
Gotta watch that.
I started on the DVD series recommended by my cousin, and then we watched season one, season two, and now we watch season three on the DVR. I've been paying more attention just to, like, I guess the mainstream stuff happening in comics. I know Ghost Rider opened. I know.
Yeah.
I don't know why it opened, but it did. I've just been keeping up with, you know, the news, and it's kind of weird because a lot of the stuff that's been so geeky and so, you know, kind of pigeonholed when you know, for guys like us, is pretty much now mainstream stuff. And it's like, you know, you don't have to be a nerd or a geek to I guess appreciate it, you know?
Yeah, the thing is a lot of it is not not a lot of it. Things are beginning better, but a lot of it is not good mainstream stuff. Like you just talked about Ghost Rider. I think Walking Dead is an example of something that's good. Could be better, in my opinion. The TV show could be much better. But getting back to Walking Dead, what are your feelings on the show at, like, as far as it's gone? Because for me, season one, I was, I don't know about this. I love zombies, but it's a little boring. The pacing's a little slow. And then the first part of season two really kind of got me interested, and got kind of suckered me back in, especially with
Right.
the season two part one finale, which was just unbelievable.
It's great.
Yeah,
Yeah.
with the barn and him opening up the barn and just everyone, no,
Well,
screaming, crying, and it was just very dramatic. And I was like, okay, I'm in. I'm in. I'm in again. You drag me back in.
Right, but I think there was also kind of a something of a shift between the first and second seasons. I mean, the first season there was still a lot of kind of expositional stuff going on. You're getting to know these people, and I think the story was very much based on the backdrop of what was happening, as opposed to the second season. Once they get to the to kind of the farmhouse, you're looking at they go into kind of deeper examinations of the characters and how they're relating to each other. I mean, they kind of throw in the whole pregnancy thing, and now they have the kind of and then pretty late on, they kind of throw in the whole the fact that he's keeping people that were close to him in the barn. And I mean, I think they did some really great things with the individual episodes, but I think there was a little bit less interaction of the actual kind of zombie thing with it. I mean, it was much more about the relationships between the main characters.
Yeah, which is my sort of issue with both the book and the comic. And quite honestly, there's not enough zombie, in my opinion. There's not enough crazy, scary zombie moments. Because the thing is, and I've said this before on the Ain't It Cool talkbacks, whenever Walking Dead comes up or stuff like that, there is an old BBC TV show called Survivors. It's an amazing show. I don't know if either of you have heard of it, but the first series is amazing. And I discovered this years ago at a comic convention, at the San Diego Comic Convention. There was a guy selling bootlegs, and the cover just like sucked me in. And basically, it's about like there's this plague that wipes out something like 90% of the population of the earth. And it's these people in England and what they're doing to survive. And the first series is amazing because, like, society is collapsing. They're grouping together. They're trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, it's very BBC 70s production values, but that actually helps the show because it looks like you're watching a stage play almost, but it adds to the grittiness of it, you know? And so what ends up happening is the first series happens and then you get to the second series, and all of a sudden it's like Little House on the Prairie. It's like we've got to grow vegetables and we've got to figure out how to get water. And I'm like, this is some boring ass shit. I don't care about that. It's much more the survival aspect and the man against man. And the problem with Walking Dead, and now I sound like an idiot saying this sort of thing, is that the danger of it becoming like Talking Dead and about only interpersonal relationships is very great once you start kind of ignoring that the zombies are there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see where you're going with that. I mean, I think one of the things that they're trying to do is, I mean, I know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, isn't this kind of the one of the first times, at least on American television, that we've seen kind of, the zombie apocalypse played out over multiple seasons? I mean, usually if you start thinking about this kind of thing, you're thinking about, you're thinking about Danny Boyle, you're thinking about 28 Days Later, you're thinking about 28 Weeks Later. So it's a couple hours. At best, I think we saw Dead Set, which is kind of a mini series. But I think kind of the zombie apocalypse thing to play out over an extended period of time, that it's almost like they're taking a break from it to kind of examine these interpersonal things. Now, whether or not that will end up playing out
in the future of the show. I mean, it may actually be setting the stage for why some of these people are going to be doing some of the things that they do, and the fact that they have dark sides. I mean, you know, I think it, you know, in particular, and I'm forgetting the name of the one character, but I mean, we've already seen one of the main characters basically start to show his dark side. I mean, he basically kind of abandoned one of his comrades to get the medication back to the rest of the group, and albeit a noble cause, it still kind of shows his dark side. So you start to wonder if some of the establishing that they're going to be doing right now is to set up kind of the behavioral things of what's going to be going on and with the rest of the you know, with the rest of the show.
I agree with that too. I think also it's a medium adjustment for Kirkman, because he's been doing all these comics and he's probably been creating it in such a way that it was published originally by who? Was it Image or was
Image.
It published?
Yeah,
so,
Image.
You know, so he probably had more control in that medium where he was from, and TV's different. He's got to, you know, you got to kind of deal with all these wacky commercial breaks, and you know, he's got a certain amount of time to tell a story, and then he's got to deal with all these assholes. I mean, there's probably the asshole quotient, you know, on like a TV type set or some, you know, studio thing is grace, you know, is much bigger, is much greater in value than something where you're in your own studio, you're writing the thing you love, and you have to maybe talk to an editor. You know, I don't know how much the publisher would really get involved, but.
Well, you know, is the public. Kirkman is a partner in Image Comics now. Like, he's so, one of the big dudes there at Image.
There you go. So, you know, Darabont, I think, was the perfect kind of fit for the show.
Absolutely.
Because he honors creators' work, and he's done that with all the Stephen King stuff. And at the same time, he's technical and obviously has a vision for, you know, the screen, whether it's TV or movies. But the problem is he's just had that rep. So they've had a shakeup there. I mean, and I think when you have that, I don't know, to me it's kind of translating on screen, because they have so many characters. Each of those actors themselves, they probably don't know whether they're going to live or die from script to script. So they're nervous for real, which I like. I like that element about the show. But I just think they need to pace it up and bump it up more, give us more zombie stuff. And not by much. It doesn't have to be really much, but take it out of this whole soap opera shit. I just need a little uptick in the pacing.
Yeah.
Of the show.
Well, but
not much. I love it. I mean, I think they're doing a great job with it.
But that's the issue with the comics too, right? I mean, that's the thing, is it's basically Walking Dead, and it's sort of one of the weaknesses in the zombie genre, which is like you can only really take it so far, right? Because after a while, you know, unless it's like the running, like infected zombies or something, and you know, it's after a while they're pretty easy to sort of dodge as long as you don't get into like a mass population area. And then, you know, the problem with Walking Dead, and it's what's been happening with the actual comic book, and I'm not going to ruin anything for you, but I will say that the past like six issues maybe have just been wallowing around in like like interpersonal like BS. I mean, there's been a little bit of high tension, which is good, and there's one moment that happened last year that was really just, for me, almost jumping the shark moment, where I was like, okay, I may be done with this. And obviously I'm not, because I'm still reading it, but the believability factor of this one particular event, which I'm not going to ruin for anybody, is, for me, was just like, come on, dude. Like, if you're going to do this, go all the way. Like you did earlier in the series with what he did to Lori, you know,
sure.
The wife in the series, right. In the comic book series, which we don't know it's going to happen in the TV show, but
yeah, I wish it would. I really would.
Me too. I can't stand that actress.
A lot of the characters, especially the women, I don't find likable at all.
Oh, you're in trouble now. You're in trouble now. Remember, this is going out over the internet.
And the book, I loved a lot of the women characters. I thought in general they were just more rounded. They had, and I don't think it's the fault of the actors. I think it's just either the direction or the way that the it's just being interpreted for TV. I think they don't, I don't know, not really into it. But I say the same can be said for some of the other the male actors too. There's just some stuff I did not hear need to. This last episode, you know, they followed Herschel to the bar and he's drinking. I'm drinking. I'm a drunk. Great. We saw the flask. You showed us the flask. He's drinking. Make this more like, you know, old WWE. Bring me new characters. You know what I mean? I don't care if Rick shoots him out. I like to see Rick do what he does. And we needed that to see him just take these guys out outlaw style. And I think, you know, there needs to be a little more of that too. He needs to be boosted.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking their time and God bless them. They could do it, you know.
Well, the thing is the character that Mark was talking about before, Shane.
Yeah.
Right. I don't disagree with that guy at this point. The dude is obviously going off the reservation, but, you know, I mean, I don't want a barn of undead. Like what you're saying with Rick, Rick needs to step it up. He needs to grow a set. You know what I'm talking about?
I think you start to see that. I think that's what they're kind of looking at with, because I mean, I think what they do with the back part of the first, well, I guess it's the first half of the second season, is you start to see kind of the diverging of Rick and Shane, and then in that cliffhanger episode at the end, when Rick kind of steps up and shoots the little girl himself, it's, you start to see that dark side start to come back into it again. So I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, they're examining the different sides of their personalities, but whether or not there's going to be, I don't know how the comic book plays out, but I mean, it could be interesting to see if there's almost a power struggle between Rick and Shane over, you know, and how that will play out. I mean, it's, you can start to see some of the kind of the cracks in the morality of all the different people, all the different characters.
Yeah, I mean, well, you don't read the comics, so, and I don't know if I want to ruin anything for you, but
and I don't read the comic, that's why I'm sitting out.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously something does that. That is the biggest controversy that hit season one and sort of the beginning of season two, is that what happens to Shane in the comic has not happened in the TV show, right? So my point about Rick is just like, okay, there's this shootout at the end of the episode. We know that the guy can defend himself when he wants to. But part of it is, I just don't see why in the show everyone really sees him as the leader, because he's just not really pulling it together as far as I'm concerned. You know, he doesn't have that. The guy is a decent actor, but the will that he's exerting, like, on his group, I don't even know how he holds them all together, quite honestly.
I think that's from, you just got so many characters, you can't really spend that much time on them, and you need to spend, I mean, there's characters in there that are with Herschel's family. You're like, is that a cousin? Is that
yeah, exactly.
Like, who is that? So, but like I said, I mean, to have them pretty much have this comic blow up like it did and get over to TV and then kind of create this show where it's like, you, I go from hating the show in 1 minute to then loving the show in the next moment.
Yeah.
That was a lot like how I felt when I was reading that comic. There were times where I just couldn't read it for like 5-6 days. And I'd be like, I'm never opening that again. And then I would go back and I'd find myself reading it being like, holy shit!
Yeah. Well, that's
they
what
just did that. I'm like, no.
You gotta read. If you read Walking Dead, do you read Invincible? Kirkman's Invincible.
No, I honestly had the last set of books I bought. I went up to the Meltdown on Sunset.
Yeah,
right. If you're ever in Hollywood and you're a comic collector, get to the Meltdown. You probably know about it, but. If you're out there, but
Meltdown,
yeah,
awesome.
I bought a bunch of self-published, like, incredibly wackadoodle books, because I'm been investigating what to do and what is kind of out there under the sun. Turns out everything is out there.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
As far as self-publishing books, but that was really the last batch of stuff I bought, and then I just ordered some stuff off Amazon that is not comic related. But yeah, I haven't bought a book in a while, and I heard Golden Apple, you know, is for sale on Melrose.
Yeah. Well, from what I've heard, it's there. I don't know much about it, but I have a blogger friend. His name is Corey Blake, and his website is coreyblake.com. And he wrote a little bit about that. I think he writes a lot of really good comic stuff, and I think it's their stock. I don't know if it's the physical location. I'm not sure exactly, but they were trying to sell it on eBay.
Yes.
Which was like amazing. And from what I heard, they didn't get a buyer. Like they didn't. Yeah.
Who the heck wants to buy a comic book store right now?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, there's this shop literally right down the street from me called Collector's Paradise. And they opened up a shop in Pasadena, like a second shop, right in the middle of the recession.
Maybe they're good with their people, though. I mean,
they are good. They are good. They don't give discounts as much as I would like. They give a 10% discount. But they're good. Anytime you go in there, they remember my name, and you know they know what books I'm into.
That's what you want. It's got to be like visiting a crack house where you're like, hey, come on in, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's part of the problem is I'm not really one for the heavy sell. You know what I mean? Like, right, I'm not like, right, if you like this, you're going to like this. And I'm like, dude, I'm spending $4 on a bunch of comic books right now, okay? I'm not ready to pick up Batman Goes to, you know, Hollywood or whatever. Like, I'm tired of it, you know? It's every freaking crossover, every event or whatever. But I mean, that's why I like Kirkman's books, like Walking Dead and Invincible, which, to me, Invincible is honestly the best superhero book on the stands, and it's because it's controlled by one person and there's not a ton of crossovers, and what happens in the book, you know, is gonna just be real, like, to the characters in that book. They're not gonna turn around and have another writer come in and just crap on whatever another writer did, you know, 10 years ago, you know.
Sure.
It's one dude and he's piloting the book, and it's great. And Invincible, for the people that don't know it, you know, it's sort of Superman's son, sort of. And it's just, he's a teenager, sort of like early college. And that I would love to be seen turn into a series of movies or TV shows, because that would make a really good series. I don't know if you could ever get the budget together for it, because there's so many huge cosmic moments and stuff, but that would make a
good show.
I don't know.
Kirkman, it's by Kirkman, Robert?
Yeah,
Kirkman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's gonna do just fine. I mean, Walking Dead already has enough clout behind it where he's gonna get that picked up, I believe. But before we go further, Mark mentioned a really stellar movie that I was actually thinking of watching.
Not Ghost Rider.
No, This Means War.
What is This Means War? What is that?
I think he's pulling our legs.
Well, I'm sure he is, but what is This Means War?
It's the one that we saw the preview for a while back. It's the two.
God. Okay, I know which one we're talking about. Yes, I know which one we're talking about. I know which one. The one that you said you're going to take your wife to see that on Valentine's Day, right? And I was like, no, I'm not going to take anybody. I will not see that. I will stick burning hot pokers in my eyes before I see that. No offense to Tom Hardy or the new Captain Kirk, but I'm not going to see that.
It's Bane and Captain Kirk at each. I mean, what more could you ask for?
You know what?
Like,
why don't you? True. If you want some Tom Hardy goodness, you need to check out Warrior. That is an amazing movie. An amazing movie. I got it off of Netflix. I rented it. Somebody at work told me, you need to check this out. And I was like, really?
I don't know. I saw it, but I'm kind of I've been watching MMA for like 30 years now.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't actually, that's impossible. 30 years. I'm 35.
So. Yeah, I don't think it's been around.
For literally, I could say, well, when did UFC, whenever UFC 1 came out, so I was 7th grade. Anyway, I did not like that movie as
much
as people did. Yeah, did not do it for me because it was so well acted. Nick Nolte is amazing in that.
The two guys were amazing. The lead guy,
I'm not into it. I thought it misrepresented what it operates under. I'm a real snob. This is real snobbery and real geeky coming out.
Yeah, I think so.
But it operates from a purely American viewpoint of MMA. And to me, mixed martial arts is like soccer. It's like a worldwide sport because it happens everywhere. It happens in Japan, Russia, China,
India.
Well,
yeah, it happens in China.
It happens on the mean streets of, you know, Van Nuys in California. But it's
really getting into the exotic locations here, you know?
Yeah, but I just thought it was – I know the storylines they took, and they did such a good job of mixing it together, but I felt a lot of it was really cornball and really cheesy, actually.
Oh, my goodness. I loved it.
Yeah. It did well, though. I couldn't believe
that it didn't get nominated for Best Picture, because the crap that did, I was like, you got to be kidding me. This movie, I did not know what to expect. I didn't know what it was about. I just knew it was Warrior, and a dude at work told me to rent it, and we put it in, and my wife was like, what is this? It's got dudes fighting, and it looks like it's going to be really violent, and she's not anti-violence or anything, but she's like, what is this? I was like, I don't know. I heard it was good. Let's just watch it. We were watching it, and by the end of the movie, she is bawling on the couch, and I'm choked up, so it did something, and I'm as cynical as it's going to get. I am, like, you look up cynical in the dictionary, and there's my face smiling at you. You know, I am cynical as all hell, but I love that movie. I laughed
at the end.
Ah!
I haven't seen it, so
You're an awful human being.
it goes without saying, but I think what you run into you know, and it's interesting because over the past several years, there was the fighter, there was the wrestler, all of these films. I mean, the wrestler, I think it was superbly acted by.
Oh, wrestler! To me, the wrestler is a better representation of what wrestling really is than what MMA really is, and it's so young that I can't. The thing is, the movie really wasn't about MMA. It's something they were doing in the movie. The movie's about this family, really, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, so in that respect, it's super successful. It's a great story with great acting. I just didn't like the representation of MMA in it. And that's a real geeky, snobby thing to say.
I think that what you're dealing with as far as like Warrior, I think like Warrior is to MMA as to like what Rocky is to boxing. And Raging Bull is to boxing as to what the wrestler is to wrestling. You know what I mean? There's still, I don't know much about MMA. I haven't watched it, but it seems like there hasn't been a really hardcore, you know, truth to be told MMA movie, unless it's a documentary out there, which I have not seen.
Exactly, there is. And the documentary is called The Smashing Machine. And everyone should see that movie because it's about this guy who was a wrestler from the United States, was fighting in the heyday in Japan when Japan MMA was big, which was, you know, 50, 60,000 people stadium shows. And that documentary shows you what really happens in MMA. And he has a serious addiction. The guy's was using like painkillers and steroids and just whipping people, just murdering them, and not murdering them, but he was going through competition. But it shows the training and it shows the real life of what it means to do that. So there's that whole side to it that wasn't in there. There's a zany side to MMA. There's a pro wrestling aspect to MMA. But the company that produced that movie, Tap Out, is very conscious of what they're putting out there. And those guys are really successful in the apparel industry. And they showed MMA as a sport, and I think they showed it really well. I don't believe it's a sport.
You don't believe it's a sport? What do you think it is?
There's sporting aspects to it, but it's prize fighting, and whether or not prize fighting is sport is I think been a long, long debate. I'm just a snob about it, and I know that because overwhelmingly people come up to me and tell me to go watch that movie.
Oh my gosh. But wait, what's the documentary called again?
The Smashing Machine.
The Smashing Machine.
It's brilliant. It was probably the first great documentary on what MMA is, and it's about Mark Kerr. This guy Mark Kerr, who was a wrestler and just amazing. I thought it was just awesome.
Wow. And is that on Netflix or?
That's a great question. I could probably check right now. But
yeah, check it out because I'll add it to my queue.
I think it's done by a pretty popular company now that's been producing a lot of movies, but I can't remember. I just know Smashing Machine. If you want to see this whole other side to MMA, complete, like, what is it, 180 or 360 behind what what that movie was showing that you mentioned, Warrior.
Yeah.
It'll totally different view. Totally wow. different. Yeah, and that's the I still think you could put that those elements in there, you know, like I mean, even, you know, we're just talking about Walking Dead. I think Walking Dead tries to put those comic book elements in there, and that's what I think that's what keeps me bouncing back and forth. It's something like Warrior where it's like, okay, we're just going to – but that's for – again, that's for film and that's for plot devices. And, I, you know, a couple writers I know, they always try to tell me. They're like, look, it cannot be how the fanboys want it all the time.
No, of course not. You know? And that's the big uproar with season one of Walking Dead. People were like, what? I this is not the comic book. And I'm like – well, it can't – I mean, it needs to be faithful. And even Kirkman himself said, this is not going to be the comic book or else you're going to know exactly what's coming, you know. And that's not the issue I have with Walking Dead. The issue that I have with the TV show and the comic book tends to be the pacing and at times. And then I think that's what Kirkman can be a little good at, which is lulling you into a sense of complacency. And you're sort of like, okay, what's it? And then something just happens, and it's like a shovel to the face. You're just, what? What? But I think that Kirkman's flaw is that he takes those quiet moments and stretches them out too long, too long. And by that time, you've become a little too impatient, like with what's going on in the comic book right now.
Yeah. So, Mark, do you have you watched what have you been watching lately, movie-wise?
I saw Mission Impossible a couple of times. I think we talked about that, and I think with the amount of time that has gone by, a lot has been said about that movie. I saw the first three quarters of Walking Dead. You know, the second half of this season with their premiere. I have to check out the rest of it. I mean, and I was telling Christian about this at one point. There was an article this past week. And I guess it's at the end of season one when they're at the it was a Center for Disease Control,
right?
And the doctor,
which is not in the comic, and that was ridiculous. Worst episode of the whole series. Anyway, go on.
Well, no, but it's interesting because it follows a very classic kind of script format, which is that essentially they find this haven, and not only have they found this haven, but they're. You know, he's very close to figuring out the whole secret of everything, and then quite literally it all goes up in a giant explosion, which is, you know, Hollywood ending if you want to get to that. But no, there was an article that and they were discussing somebody was conducting an interview with the guy who plays Rick on the show, and is it Andrew Lincoln, I think it is, and so I guess the big question has been that during that sequence, the doctor whispers something to Rick. And we still haven't been told what it is. And I guess it's one of the well-kept secrets. And I guess that in the article, they were even talking about the fact that one of the sound guys on the show was going through the live audio from the takes to see if he could actually hear what was said, and he still couldn't hear it. So apparently it's supposed to be revealed this season. I think the Andrew Lincoln said something along the lines of the fact that, well, if this guy knows you know, kind of what's going on with whatever the disease is, you have to count on the fact that it's probably not all that good. And how that will play out, I don't know. I mean, is it the fact that there's no cure for this? What?
Well, the funny thing for me is that when you first talked to me about that moment, I had completely forgotten about it. So that shows you how much impact that moment had on my psyche, especially somebody who watches the show. I was like, wait, what? Yeah. He whispered in somebody's... And then when you mentioned it, I remembered it. But to, you know, I mean... Obviously, they're going to have to do a callback, you know, a couple of seconds of showing Rick listening to the guy whisper something in his ear. You know what I mean? It's very dramatic.
I remember the doctor in that. That actor cracks me up because it always looks like he doesn't care about anything. And he's just talking about this disease thing, and I'm just like, really? Really? He's like, and then he talks about his wife, and I'm like, yeah, Yeah, you don't look broken up about it, man.
That's horrible.
And, well, he's numb to the horror he's surrounded by.
You're right. Actually, no, I should have seen that aspect of it.
Yes, he's been numbed. He's seen so much
yeah,
pain.
He's become callous and uncaring to survive, you know?
That was a wacky episode. But I guess you liked Mission Impossible. You saw it twice in the theater?
He saw it with me the second time.
But we should preface this by saying that Christian didn't have a hard argument to sell for me going to see the movie a second time.
No, you said you would go see it again, and I was like, really? Okay, let's go see it. And we went to go see it at the, like, 9 a.m. $6 show at the local theater.
Which is good, because in order to get to elicit any kind of a cinematic response out of me at 9 or 10 a.m. in the morning, the movie's got to be something special.
On a Sunday.
On a Sunday, nonetheless.
Yeah, when you should be in church, right? No, I'm just kidding.
No, but still, I mean, it's, you know, I don't actually think the brain receptors usually start working until about noontime on Sundays anyways. So, you know, it's – I think we've had this conversation. I enjoyed the movie. I don't know what to say beyond that. It's – I thought it was – I think it was surprising, not from the standpoint that – that it was good. I think when you get into any kind of a series, by the time you're on the fourth installment, it gets difficult to impress the audience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think with this one, and we've talked about it a little bit, I think the great thing about Mission Impossible, this installment, I liked the J.J. Abrams one. I did not like the first two at all. And I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan, and I was not going to go see it until I kept hearing people saying, it's really good, including you guys, like saying, it's really good, you got to go see it. And the thing that got me is that it's gone in the complete opposite direction of what the James Bond and Bourne movies have done, which is kind of abandon the silly secret agent thing with all the gadgets and all the over-the-top stunts and all the, you know, sexual innuendos and all that stuff. They obviously, Brad Bird and I don't know who wrote the screenplay on the top of my head right now, they made a conscious decision to go like, hey, everybody's doing this. Why don't we go back, you know, to like the Connery Bond, the Roger Moore Bond, when things were a little crazier, you know, with everything. And I think they did a great job with that. That's why I liked it. You know, it's way over the top. It's fun. And, you know, it's got tongue planted firmly in cheek, you know, which is, hey, you know, enjoy the ride, but don't take it too seriously. But we're not going to insult your intelligence at the same time. You know what I mean? They were smart. They did a good job. And I actually really, really enjoyed it. The one thing that I have to say about it is, and it's the one thing that I have to say about a show like, say, Fringe or Alias, or basically is, you know, and I hope I'm not ruining the plot for anyone out there, is that there's this giant explosion on Russian soil. They blow up the Kremlin, for God's sakes. And the Russians think that we did it. The Americans did it. And first of all, there's no explanation as to, you know, the Cold War is over. There's no explanation as to why do the Russians think that we did it? I mean, really? Why would we have any reason to blow up the Kremlin? There's no tensions between the United States and Russia that are explained in the movie. And, you know, and if the State Department or our espionage divisions are telling the Soviets, who are our friends now, that we did not do this, why don't the Russians believe us? And then the second thing is, in the movie, they say, hey, listen, we're disavowing, you know, the MI branch. You know, you guys are rogue. We're saying that you guys are terrorists, and you're done. You're done. But they meet with Ethan Hunt secretly, and they say, okay, it's up to you to solve this, because we can't be involved. And I'm like, wait a minute. There's Russian nuclear codes out there, and you're telling me that you're leaving it to the one dude that you're disavowing? Even if you don't want the Russians to know that you're investigating it or that you're involved, you got to have, like, every good man on this. You know what I mean? You can't just have one dude and his three or four members of his team looking for Russian nuclear codes. That's insanity, you know? And so that's a little bit of the ridiculousness that you kind of climb into, which is there's only one man for the job. And I'm like, no.
I mean, apparently they have bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, than Russian nuclear codes out on the black market.
The Olympics are coming this summer. I mean, but I think it's interesting because in juxtaposition to that, the one thing I really, really enjoyed about this movie is the fact that it brought it back to very much a team dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious that it's his movie, but they introduced the Jeremy Renner character, which I think he's a great foil to the rest of the characters in there. He's kind of the fish out of water type scenario, and you're supposed to believe that he's the casual observer, but yet he has this. I don't want to ruin anything for any of you guys out there, but he does have a history with one of the main characters that he kind of explains about two thirds of the way through the movie. But
yeah.
It is still very much it's an ensemble team dynamic cast, and I think that's what makes it work. They really, really brought the Simon Pegg character back up in profile, and I mean he's quite obviously the. It's interesting because he's kind of taken on the humor or the kind of the comic relief of the movie. I mean, he's there to offer kind of the foil to this very, very serious kind of action oriented thing going on. But I mean, kind of touching on what Christian said, there is a certain level of suspension of disbelief that has to go into this. And
that's a big level of suspension of disbelief.
There's a big suspension of disbelief that goes into this. I think if you step back and really, kind of analyze, and I think that can be said about any movie that's coming out these days. If you analyze it to death, you'll lose yourself in it. And
no, but I think that there's very, very good. Like we've talked about this. I think that there are very small fixes to the script that could be handled where, okay, this makes sense. Like, for example, the Kremlin gets blown up by the United States, but you could have had early on in the movie in the background or somebody watching a TV news story and, tensions between the United States and Russia are escalating over nuclear arms in Iran or whatever made up country they want to, like maybe there's some kind of diplomatic stuff going on that we don't know about or that the audience could be very quickly informed on. Bam, you're done. Okay, now I buy it. You know what I mean? And then you could tweak the script to say the Russians are investigating this as well or something to it just doesn't make sense that there's only one team looking for nuclear codes that this guy wants to blow up the world with. You know what I mean? And there's like little things like that that you can just pepper the script with. You don't even have to write a whole new scene or anything like that. You know what I mean? You don't have to film a whole new scene. You would have to write something, but not film a whole new scene, which would explain away the elements of disbelief. Like, I think suspension of disbelief is one thing, but when you kind of just toss complete logic out the window, which, the movie does. I mean, the car park scene fight at the end where Tom Cruise drives the car that's ridiculous, but...
Yeah. I think there's, along with suspension of disbelief, I think there's probably the fact that this movie... I think one of the things that makes it work is that it doesn't take itself too seriously. I think I give no other example than his mission accomplished line at the end of the movie where the fact that in the final scene was the Bing Rhames character is kind of like, you actually said that. And it's like the movie pokes fun at itself at points that.
Yeah.
That I think kind of I and it's interesting. I think it's strategically placed in the way that. That if there is somebody that starts to kind of lose themselves in whatever suspension of disbelief there is in the film, then the comedy almost knocks it back off track so that you're kind of like, oh, okay, well, and I think it works that way. But
yeah, well, comedy is not a good substitute for bad writing. But
the one thing that I'm having trouble remembering now is, did they ever address the question of, I mean, you have this person who's essentially on the black market that buys these codes, and he obviously sets the team up to take the fall for it. So I think they kind of address the fact that the blame is assigned to the Mission Impossible group by that because they're set up. But do they ever really address how this guy knows, you know, apparently a top secret group that, you know, that functions below the radar and you know, doesn't exist essentially, how he finds out they're going to be there? Or, I mean, I know it's obviously a setup, but it's kind of like, again, and speaking to Christian's point, you know, maybe that's something they could have addressed. Maybe that's almost an entire other movie, which is the fact that there's obviously a leak somewhere that they've got to, you know, and maybe I'm just forgetting that they addressed that.
I don't remember anything like that. But it was 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday.
It was 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. So, I mean,
yeah.
Perfect movie to see at that time.
But yeah. It woke me up.
Throwback. To me, it was a throwback movie, even though a throwback is probably only a few years because it was fun. You go in, you have some popcorn, you leave. You like, that was worth my money.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I do not disagree. I enjoyed it. I'm just saying that there were like little bits, and that's the type of person I am. I tend to nitpick sometimes, but there were like little bits where I was like, okay. And like I said, it's with every show. Like, I'm a big Fringe fan, and they investigate like all these things, you know, all these weird happenings, and they have one scientist looking into it. And I'm like, really? If there's like some kind of trans-dimensional other universe, you're gonna have more than one person looking into it. You know what I mean? So it's just a trope to that particular kind of fiction, which is fine. Whatever. It is what it is. You got to accept it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know.
So actually, I wanted to, before we wrapped up today, I want to talk about, I don't know if we have time, but or maybe we just talk about it next episode, all the different publishing formats for digital comics. I didn't know there's not only like the Apple one, but there's like three or four different ones depending on which like online publisher you go with. Did you guys know that?
I'm not really doing digital comics. I'm still doing print. And like I said, there's a shop down the street and that I go to every once in a while, like once every couple of weeks, but I'm not really doing digital formats. So, I mean, we could talk about it next week if you want.
Maybe next week. I'm going to do some research.
I'm going to do some research and
bring that in as far as what that is. Cause it's kind of mimicking what music has gone through, which is cool. But then I don't know, format wise.
Yeah. Frightening. All right. Well, I think we're just wrapping up this episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Hopefully we'll be able to do this every week, and hopefully you listeners are still out there listening to us. And that is Part-Time Fanboy. Okay, do you guys think we should do intros right now and then like splice it in? Or like, what do you guys think?
As far as who we are? Yeah, I guess that's probably a good idea.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn. I am a part-time cartoonist and sometime designer, and I do comic book reviews every once in a while for Ain't It Cool News. Anyone want to go next? Ian, what is it that you do?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Ian Scheller, and I'm a full-time person. I'm going to give out my website, ianscheller.com. And all my music and all my stuff's on there. And I've been reading comics since I was a wee little lad. And I got to say, my intro into comics was really The Watchmen and The Dark Knight Returns.
Ooh.
And since those two books, I've just been reading and trying to follow. And I'm actually doing my own cartoons now. And just really glad to be on the podcast to give my input about the various reaches of I guess it all kind of starts with comics. That's kind of why we're on this thing. But movies, comics, even theater and music. I love it all. Love creating it all. So
yes, good. And what about
good
you, Mark? What are you about you?
Well, they call me Mark Altman, and and I think it's entirely possible that I spend too much time in the movie theater and in front of the television, which gives me, I think, probably I don't know if you'd call it a unique or maybe just a watered down insight into what's going on in the film and television world. I've spent a good part of my career working in and around those projects and those types of people. I know that at its best, it can inspire us. At its worst, it can drive us to, well, to bitch about it on podcasts, I guess. But either way, I think it's a creative experience. I think it it reminds us of how good storytelling can unfold, and at worst, how really bad storytelling can unfold. Right. But
I'm just going on record as saying all our intros suck, and we need to come up with something more succinct.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing. Christian.
Mark.